Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite transatlantic football podcast back for another week. My name's Jack Collins, and I will be your host today. And joining me across the water with a transfer ranking, he's back in the hot seat. It's only Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, we're revving back up. Transfer window opens in a month, so let's get going. Let's start seeing what's out there. Two different types of rankings today. In the second part, we'll focus on a few teams that have got dilemmas and are likely to be busy. And then in the final section, I'll look at a few specific player situations that we need to look out for.
Okie dokie. I'm excited. I'm excited to be back in business, excited to hear what you have to say, and also excited to look at some of the bits and bobs that might be going on in January. Before we do that, and we haven't done this for a couple of weeks, but I think it might be time to bring back a little bit of things we love. And I've got one for you, just to take the heat off you, to take the pressure off your legs for a little while before you get really into it. And in the madness of this weekend with the Chelsea-Arsenal game going on, with so many storylines across the world, Barcelona going top again over Real Madrid, El Gran Derby got a little bit overlooked. And I want to give some love to my beloved Real Betis, because a first win at the Sanchez-Pizjuan against Sevilla for 8 years. Wow. For Real Betis. And it was everything I think you want in a derby. Now, I say that with the caveat that the game was suspended for 15 minutes because Sevilla fans were throwing bottles at Betis players, right? Like, But there is an element of that, that even that at 2-0 up with 2 minutes to go is quite funny. Like, there's an element of it, you're kind of looking at it and saying, well, the Betis players are trying to stay on the pitch because they're like, no, finish the game. We want to finish the game. Sevilla players are like, we should probably go off. The protocols suggest we should go off. And it's like one of those funny things. Now, it wasn't a game of loads of quality, especially in the first half, but it was lit up by Pablo Fornals at the start of the second half. Now, Premier League fans might remember Pablo Fornals as a kind of like tricky, diminutive attacking midfielder, sometimes played on the flanks. He's been reinvented at Betis by Manuel Pellegrini as like a deep-lying midfielder, but a very, very industrious deep-lying midfielder. He sits in the double pivot for Betis, and he makes things happen with this relentless work rate. But this goal that he scores to crack the derby open, if you will, is a kind of combination of what he was and what he is now. So he works incredibly hard. It comes from, you know, the Betis goalkeeper, Valles, getting the ball and releasing him in his own half from a defensive set piece. And you kind of look through it and you're like, oh, okay. Like, this is very, very interesting to see like how quickly they transition. It all comes from Pablo Fornals driving through the middle of the park, this industry, this work rate that's been drilled into him by Pellegrini. And then he gets into the box and is like, oh, maybe I'll just bring out the Pablo Fornals that used to exist. Like, he beats three players. He rides this unbelievable last-ditch challenge from Azpilicueta, because Sevilla had really turned it on at the start of the second half. And he has the poise and the calm to slot it away as well. It's a beautiful, beautiful goal to open it up. And then there's a second goal scored by Sergio Altamira. And Betis go on to win relatively comfortably. Now, Sevilla have more shots. Betis kind of dominated in terms of like actually creating chances that were of note. But Sevilla had a lot of the ball. The Pizjuan was very, very unhappy. Now, not only are they starting to slide down the table, and my pre-season prediction that Sevilla would end up right in the heart of a relegation scrap is starting to look a little bit more reasonable at this point. They're 4 points above the relegation zone at the moment. And whilst they probably won't get relegated, because I think there are three worse teams than them, and Almeida's done a relatively good job in bringing together a very disparate group of players, it was, I think, a sign this. It was like when the ball got played down and actually you looked at it as a football game with all the passion, and it is one of the most passionate games in world football, I think. It's written about as the frying pan of Spain by Colin Miller in his excellent book about Sevilla and Betis. But it's one of those in the heat of Seville, there's this unbelievable rivalry that exists that probably goes under the radar of most people. And, you know, regular listeners will know that I talk about this game a lot because, you know, I have my affiliations in this part of the world. But I think that, you know, sometimes it gets forgotten that this is one of the great derbies of Europe. It is right up there with, you know, anything you can throw at me from a European perspective in terms of the passion, in terms of how much it matters to the fans, in terms of actually a city divided down the middle, two fan bases that just care so much. And I think as a Betis fan, this is the perfect way you want to win a derby. You know, it's a scrappy, passionate first half without loads of quality. The game is lit up by this moment of magic from a player playing in the heart of your midfield. Betis, by the way, missing in this game, Antony, who's obviously been very, very important for the past 9-10 months or so, although he took a slow start to this season. They're missing Isco, who's Betis' best player. They're missing Giovanni Lo Celso, who's Betis' second best player. You're looking at it and thinking, okay, who's going to provide the magic? Fornals goes, don't worry. I got it. Like, I got this. Absolutely no bother whatsoever. And he takes the game by the scruff of the neck. And Betis, you know, once they've gone 1-0 up, take control of it. They become the better side by a distance. They score a second goal. Isaac Romero, who came onto the pitch, gets sent off. Maybe it's a little bit of one of those where he's like, I should have been starting in this game. But he comes on and overcommits to a challenge. It's a red card. I don't think there's many arguments about it. You've seen them given as yellows, but I think that as soon as it was given as a red on the pitch, it was never going to be overturned by VAR in that respect. And then there's this kind of chaotic moment in the last 5 minutes where the game is put on hold because the Sevilla fans are so angry. And Betis players celebrating every single challenge in front of the Sevilla fans like it means the absolute world. And it does mean the absolute world in this one. But like the perfect way, I think, to win a derby away from home. So I wanted to put some love out. Betis sitting relatively comfortably in fifth in the league. They're not probably going to challenge the top four of Barcelona, Real Madrid, Villarreal and Atleti. They feel a little bit too far behind already, I think, to genuinely get along with that. And dropping 4 points in the last two games, not ideal from that perspective. But actually, this one matters so much more to the Betis faithful than, you know, any other result, than the getting Champions League football, anything like that. It's win the derby and show dominance. And to win it for the first time in 8 years away from home and actually get one over and kind of contribute to Sevilla's kind of slide down the table as well, felt like a big, big moment. And I thought it was, you know, just one of those ones where you look at and go, yeah, you know what? Anyone who experiences derby football in any kind of shape or way would love to win a derby in this manner. So I wanted to pour out some love. Sevilla, I think, will be fine. They have problems in that this squad is just not very good. And I think Matias Almeida is actually doing a perfectly reasonable job of kind of just maintaining the status quo, considering he has very little to play with. But they have some major issues as well in terms of the way that their team plays. There's not loads of quality on the flanks. Akor Adams, who plays up front, is permanently offside. I have no idea what's happened to him, but he seems unable to look across the defensive line and be able to kind of determine where the defensive players are, because it's like comical how often he is called offside. But I think that, you know, just in terms of the way that you look at it, in a way that this could be won, this was perfect for Betis. And what a weekend for the green and white half of Seville.
Yeah, very good, mate. Good to see your second team won. Obviously, Fulham won. But my second team, San Diego FC, didn't win, obviously. No. So I was hoping I'd be able to say my thing I love is that San Diego FC are in MLS Cup against Messi at the weekend. But we're not. We lost to Vancouver. You know, I guess I am looking forward to the final in the sense that it's Messi against Muller. It's Miami against Vancouver. It'll be a good MLS Cup, but I was hoping that, yeah, I could have also matched you there and said that my team pulled out a big win. But unfortunately, we lost when it mattered most. So I'll have to wait till next year so I can do that.
Yeah, I mean, look, the upside of that is that this is one of the great expansion seasons, I think, right? Like, and although San Diego haven't won the Western Conference and they haven't got a shot at MLS Cup and they didn't win the Supporters' Shield, I think this will go down as one of the all-time kind of great expansion seasons from a side. And I think everyone associated with the club should be very, very proud of what they've put together this year. And you, as a kind of moving in there and seeing a team kind of spring to life, it's been, you know, a pretty cool experience, I imagine, at the same time.
Yeah, it's been fun. Obviously, for people that have lived here forever and waiting for this moment, I just land and then suddenly they've got a football team. So that
useful
was lucky.
That.
It was very lucky.
It's almost definitely... like you timed it.
Obviously, I was watching from afar. I knew that there was a chance, but it's been really cool. And obviously, the kids are loving it too. Like, it's the atmosphere is really good. Like, it's very kid-friendly as well. You know, the whole procession that surrounds a game here, you've got the fireworks and the national anthem and the big screens. Like, you'd love it, actually. I keep meaning to send it to you. There's this poem that this guy reads out about San Diego before. He's done it before all the playoff games, but it's been going for a little while now. And they try and like just build up the atmosphere. And to be fair, like at the weekend, like the atmosphere going into kickoff was as good as it's been. Unfortunately, 10 minutes later, we were 2-0 down. So it didn't pay off this time. But it's been great. Yeah, it's been... MLS gets a lot of flack, and it definitely has its faults. But I'll always stick up for it because it's a good product, and the fan base is definitely passionate, and I think that is mirrored across a lot of America now.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. We have a lot of love for MLS over here at Ranks FC. Right, we're going to take a little break then. When we come back, I'm going to put my feet up, and Dean is going to walk you through some transfer bits and bobs. Can't wait to get into it. Stick around. Welcome back to Ranks AFC, where it's time for your main ranking, and we're going to get stuck into the transfer gossip that is flying around. I'm handing you over to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. We're talking some big storylines ahead of January, and Dean, you're going to start with some teams here.
Yeah, I'll be completely honest. I don't think we're in for like a particularly magical January here. There doesn't seem to me to be that many teams willing to throw around big money. So I would urge everybody to have cautious optimism around your team's transfers rather than high expectation, because most teams just are not willing to do a lot of business. They just don't think that the opportunities are there, the players aren't there, and the financial outlook isn't great at the moment in terms of what you can gain from it. There are three big teams in the Premier League that have various things to contemplate. So I'm going to focus on them. I'm going to start with Man United, actually. At three, I'm going to go Man United. Now, I don't want to ramble on about the midfield because you literally hear about it every 10 minutes. We know Man United want a midfielder. We know that they liked Carlos Baleba. We know they like Adam Wharton. We know they like Elliot Anderson. They started to look at João Gomes at Wolves. So this is a real thing, right? But at the moment, they genuinely don't know if any of those are possible. Baleba, they've kind of gone cold on. He's not a £100 million player. He's off form, possibly because... It's possibly United's fault, by the way, because I think they might have turned his head and unsettled him a bit. And then he's never seemed to bounce back from the summer transfer window and find the form that he had last year. But nonetheless, they didn't believe he was worth £100 million in the summer either. And Brighton trying to stick by that for now. We'll see, because obviously he hasn't been... getting a lot of game time, like struggling to complete matches, things like that. So let's see if he can
didn't
refocus.
Start the weekend.
I know, like it's pretty significant, really, what's happened to him. But at the moment, you know, you're looking at a £50 million player, not a £100 million player, if that. So obviously United still like Baleba, like they know what he's capable of and they do believe he would have been a good fit, but you can't get another Ugarte here. This can't, you know, Ugarte was supposed to be the fix and now he's barely even talked about. So that didn't work out. I think Elliot Anderson is the top pick right now. I think he's the one that they think would be ideal.
I think there's probably any chance. Right as well.
And I think so. I don't think there's barely any chance of getting him in January. If there was, again, you're looking at that 100 million figure. Like, who's spending £100 million in a January transfer window? No one, basically. So I struggle to see it.
Chelsea did it with Enzo.
Chelsea, was that a January one? Yeah, yeah. But United aren't really in a situation where they have the sort of money Chelsea were throwing around then, for sure. And they've also got other positions to consider right now. So that's why situations like the João Gomes at Wolves one opens up, because Wolves have got less points than a triangle as we sit here right now, as I've seen it nicely described.
That's very good. That's very good.
It's not mine. I saw it and I was like, that is very good. And he's not going to want to stay there. He's not going to want to stay there. Can Wolves hold on to him in January? We'll have to wait to see. But, you know, you could probably argue that Wolves have actually got a better central midfield pairing than Man United in some ways. But
options there as well. Like, I'm a big fan of João Gomes and André and Jean-Ric de Bellegarde, who I think has the potential to be like a Moussa Dembélé regen. But also, you know, it's also difficult to pick for United in terms of midfield, because I'm not 100% sure João Gomes is the answer to replace Casemiro. I think you could play him alongside him, but, you know, they are adamant that the Bruno Fernandes is going to stay deep and do those things. And I think there's kind of logic in that at this point. It doesn't necessarily sort any of the problems in a way that an Elliot Anderson would, I think.
Yeah. Look, Casemiro, they're a bit concerned about. His form seems to be tailing off a bit at the moment. They're also concerned, though, that there's going to be competition for Elliot Anderson. And would they even win the race for him if he was to leave Nottingham Forest? So it's becoming ever more important that Man United qualify for the Champions League this season. Like, Amorim's job is to keep them in touch with the top four. And that's where they are. As we record this, they're 3 points off the top four. But they've really... It would really be important to get in there, because it might come down to a bidding war. It might come down to a battle with other teams that are in those positions for Elliot Anderson. And
is that a reason to genuinely move in January? Like, I think the United would lose a bidding war in the summer for Elliot Anderson. I'm not 100% sure they'd lose one in January if they do move in that time.
I just don't think there can be. I just don't think Forest will sell him. I just don't think, like, I don't think United have 100 million for Jan, and I don't think
also,
Forest will
totally
let go.
Fair. Totally fair from Forest's perspective, I should add.
That just seems to be like concrete at the moment. So I just don't think it'll become viable. Same with Adam Wharton. Can't see Palace selling him halfway through the season. So they've got to have to decide, like, what else do they do? Like, there's talk that Ederson at Atalanta is going to become available. United looked at him a year ago and he was about 70 mil. Well, his agent's suggesting he's about half that value right now. If that was true, I can see United going for it. And I think that they will look into that situation as a backup. Conor Gallagher's mentioned as a backup plan too. So we'll have to wait to see. But I think we're starting to dismiss the Premier League ones. And also, we've got to bear in mind that United have other business to do. Primarily, they would like to bring in another attacking threat / wide player. I talk about how important I think Ahmed Diallo is to the Man United system. When he's not at right wing back, they just don't seem to function in the same way. Obviously, we'll find out how true that is when he's at AFCON along with Mbeumo. But I think it's pretty clear that even when he plays in the number 10 and somebody else plays out at right wing back, United aren't as good. So can they get somebody else in so that Diallo, they can afford to miss Diallo or can afford to play him somewhere else? Antoine Semenyo is somebody that they like. He's available at £65 million. I'm not convinced they'll do it, but there's a temptation. Again, there's going to be competition for him that I'll talk about across this episode. But that is something that will be considered. They've got to get it right. And to be fair, the signings that they've made recently have been pretty good. And Mbeumo has upgraded them. Cunha's upgraded them. Sen Lammens has definitely upgraded them in goal. Finally, we're not having conversations every week about the goalkeeper. Like, that's reassuring. You know, Benjamin Sesko's probably got a bit of work to do to win people over and convince them that he's the real deal once he's back from injury. But the center of midfield and that wide attacker, I think, will be the primary positions that United look to. And they could be, if they were to do both, it would be some of the biggest transfer business we see in January.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that they need to sign another winger who can function in that wing-back role, right? If you look back to the Sporting side in, just say, 23-24, you look at it and you say, well, Nuno Santos played a lot on that left-hand side, right? Like, he really did feature, and he is very much a winger converted. Like, he was very much a forward-thinking player, first and foremost. And then, on the other side, they utilised Jenny Katamo a fair bit on that side as well, someone that could play there and actually get forward. And I think you look at games like the Everton game, right, where United have a lot of the ball but very little penetration. You're thinking you don't need fullbacks. At that point, you need players who are going to get in there and effectively function as wingers. And I think that they have one in Ahmad, and there's very little in terms of wing depth in the rest of the squad. And obviously, that's quite a hard thing to sell because you're not going to start every single game in that role. You know, you might start one or the other, if you will, unless it's a game you're very, very confident of dominating. But I think that they need to be able to switch to, not switch system, because I think we're already through that conversation. We're past it. We're done. You know, all of those things have got to it. We don't criticize other managers for sticking with a formula, right? But there has to be an ability to switch it up and actually get into a more offensive state. And I think that United lack the pieces in place, if you will, to be actually able to change things in situations like that. And so therefore, when you bring on, you know, wing back for wing back, if you will, and it's Mazraoui coming on for, I don't know, Dalot or Patrick Dorgu, it's not giving you that offensive output in the way that actually being able to bring a winger on in that situation would do, I think.
Yeah, and sometimes I see like fullbacks linked to United and they're more like a defensive traditional fullback. Like,
they've got that kind of down pat.
Yeah, like they want to be front footed. The idea of playing with the wing backs is to be wingers, not to worry about being a right back or a left back. Like, that's why they play three at the back, so that they can cover that, so that one of the DMs can shuffle across, get over there.
I wouldn't mind them looking at someone like a Fran Garcia of Real Madrid, right? Like, who is a fullback, but very much a forward-thinking fullback. And we've seen that from, you know, Xabi Alonso playing him in the front line as opposed to anything else. Like, that kind of signing, I can get a little bit more behind. But like an out-and-out fullback, I think, is nonsense at this point for United.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much where we are with Man United. I do think they will do business. And I think now that they have got themselves within touching distance of the Champions League places, and who knows, may even be in one of those Champions League places by Christmas, it gives them more reason to go into that market because there's something up for grabs. If they were like mid-table right now, then not only would we be seeing new threats towards Amorim and his job, but I don't think there would be as much need to go into the market. But I think it's actually getting to be quite important that they just add at least one body for the second half of the season. At number two, I'm going to shuffle across Manchester to Man City. I did not expect City to be major players in the January window. And I think that generally, they're actually pretty happy with how things are going. But given their position, we're recording this, by the way, before they play Fulham. Given their position that they are in touch with Arsenal and are potentially in the title race, it gives them something to think about. They are wondering whether they should have a mid-season push at actually trying to win the league. And I think that once we get to Jan, that decision will become clear, because Arsenal were talked about as having a great season, one of their best ever seasons, potentially having one of the best Arsenal teams. And yet,
best season in 20 years anyway.
Yet as we sit here, Man City are only 5 points behind. Now, obviously, that might change this week, might change next week. But considering Man City have been okay by their standards, and they're still that close, it just is making them wonder, should we go for it? And there's two areas of the pitch that they're wondering about. One is Semenyo. You've probably seen the links in the last week. I'm told it's actually genuine, that they really like how Semenyo's profile is compared to what they've already got and what they think he would change about things. I've said like before, like I'm surprised that Man City kept hold of Savinho. I still think Savinho isn't safe for the long-term future at Man City, and it wouldn't surprise me if he was sold at the end of the season. I think they probably should have sold him to Tottenham. But either way, they like Semenyo, and they are considering that triggering that release clause. So they could compete with Man United on that front. Liverpool are interested in Semenyo too. Don't forget, his clause would drop to about 50 million in the summer, and you can only sign him, we think it's the first 2 weeks, might be the first 10 days of this transfer window. They're being a bit cagey about the actual terms around it, but yeah, we'll find out very soon exactly what that is. So it's not that often in January particularly that you see somebody make a signing that significant as soon as the window opens. But for Semenyo, that's pretty much what's going to happen if he's going to leave Bournemouth at this stage. Now, the other thing for City to consider, if they do or don't go for Semenyo, because they've got money behind them, is do they go and sign another midfielder? Because Rodri's never available. Like, again, like this Fulham game in midweek, Rodri, unavailable. And it's becoming a concern. City fans will be wondering, are we even going to see him this calendar year again? It's not looking likely as we scope it out. So do they go and do something? Now, again, they might go and compete with Man United for that Elliot Anderson deal. They've been linked with Adam Wharton for a long time. They've even been linked with Edison. So all those, again, names that I talked about for Man United, Man City could come into the challenge to sign them. Again, the rumour is, the speculation is, the information out of the clubs is that the Premier League players aren't going to be available. This is Man City. And we know that they could just go for it. I know that people will think, oh, well, they've still got the cases with the charges to be sorted out. And until they do that, surely they can't go and spend this sort of money. They've got money. They can go and do it. But they're just trying to figure out what's the upside here. They've also got to consider the evolution of the team. Bernardo Silva might leave at the end of the season. So there's that gap that's going to come up. You'll also see other positions.
That's a very different profile though, right? Like, is it, if City were going to go and sign a defensive midfielder, like, I would suggest that what they should do is go and test Barcelona for one of the two marks, Bernal or Casado, right? Like, one of those two players might be available. Like, you might, especially given Barcelona's financial situation, and they won't want to sell either of them because I think they're both incredibly talented. But if you were going to go and look at something and, you know, give a 50, 60 million pound bid somewhere, like, I don't think you can get Wharton or Anderson out. I think you're absolutely right, in January. I don't think it exists. But I think you could maybe push Barcelona on getting one of the marks. And yeah. I do think it would be interesting to see if they did that, if Barcelona would be able to turn down that financial kind of little boost in the middle of the season that might just free them up a little bit in terms of being able to do business next summer.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You know, there's other things going on at Man City, like rumours right now again about James Trafford. He doesn't get many games since they signed Donnarumma. He's linked bizarrely.
They have to keep him though, because otherwise Marcus Bettinelli is going to be second choice goalkeeper, and they can't be having that.
This is it. Like, he's linked with Newcastle, which they don't need him. Like, Newcastle aren't looking for a goalkeeper.
They have two goalkeepers who are both very, very, very reasonable, like, quality goalkeepers. Yeah, and I think that we'll see Ramsdale in goal very soon.
They're not just collecting backup England goalkeepers at this point. Like, they're fine. So I don't think that will happen. And then we also see Tottenham linked today. Again, I don't see that one coming through. But It is a situation I think will be discussed. So Man City have got actually quite a lot going on. And in a window when they were ready to sit back, because they have the potential to go for the title, they might do something significant. Let's move it on to number one, where I have Tottenham. What do we think of Tottenham? They need transfers. That's what we think of Tottenham.
I was waiting to see where you were going to go. I was like, no, man, I watched Fulham win at the weekend and, you know, I witnessed some of the things in that stadium that were not great vibes. But, like, it is very, very interesting to see. And look, we had a brilliant post on our post box, which goes out on the Patreon. The link's in the description. We'd love you to come and join us over there if you haven't already, from one of our patrons, Willow. And she said basically that, you know, it doesn't matter who Tottenham sign because Thomas Frank continues to use players in the wrong positions and not set them up for success. I thought it was a really interesting point. We discussed it at length. So go over and listen. That's on the post box that went out on Monday. But it does feel like a transfer window where they need to do things, just even if to just get people back on side and to prove that we're in a new era now at Tottenham after Daniel Levy's departure.
Yeah, exactly. And they have got money to spend. I'm told it could be around £100 million to spend, which is not insignificant at a time when most clubs aren't going to be spending, especially.
That'll get you 9/10 of an Adam Wharton.
They do like Adam Wharton, to be honest, but not sure that he would be advised to go and join Tottenham right now, considering
he is kind of the player they need, actually, in many ways.
He's very much a player that they love. And a midfielder is on the agenda, but I think Yves Bissouma would have to be moved on in January for them to go and sign a midfielder in this window. Otherwise, they'll hold it back until the summer. An attacker is the main priority, probably a wide one. I don't know if they'll do a central one at the moment. I mean, potentially, if they had Kolo Muani and Solanke both available, then you've got two good central strikers there. And if you bring in another player to go out wide, then you've got a really good variety of options to unleash.
Plus Matthias Tell can play centrally. Plus Richarlison still hanging about. I'm sure we'll talk about him in a second. But like, there's four options who can play through the middle for Tottenham. Like, they surely don't need to bring in another number nine unless they get rid of someone like Richarlison.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's more important for Frank that he gets a wide player into the club. I think that there's serious doubt growing about Brennan Johnson beyond this season. I don't think he'll go in January, but I would be surprised if he managed to remain in the picture beyond this year. He was one of those players I wondered if Frank could get something out of him. But so far, no.
Centre-back... Does score goals, though. Does score goals.
Sometimes. A left-sided defender... left side centre back / left back, something they've been looking at for most of this year. So that is still has some potential if they can find somewhere within the budget. And I reported a couple of months ago that they were looking at goalkeepers as well. I'll talk about that more in the third part, but that is something on the agenda. Obviously, like, the big reason that this is number one is because it does feel like it's vital, because the manager's under increasing pressure. And while I've been very firm in my view that he's not on the verge of getting sacked, because that's what I'm told, that can obviously change. And if he keeps playing in this way and losing in the way he has been, then
if he loses to Newcastle and Brentford this week, and, like, obviously you might know the results of those by the time, or at least the first one by the time you're listening to this, like, I think that might change quite quickly.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as I say, like, they say that they're going to stick by him, but if I was to not have any information and I was sat back just looking at this from a distance,
the dreaded vote of confidence, mate.
I would agree, you know, but you can only go by briefings and stuff, and I do believe they want to stick by him. I do, but I don't know who they would get in. I don't think there's an obvious solution here. And what they say is that they want to get him a couple of players in that he wants. He has a say in who comes in, and they want to give him that opportunity and that platform across the rest of this season to build. You know, he's obviously made mistakes, but I talked about on the Patreon that I think that their home stadium has become such a poisonous atmosphere that it's impossible for players to thrive at the moment. And that all needs to change. And of course, the fans need something to get behind on the pitch. But at the moment, they're so down in the dumps that they just turn up and they have a negative energy about them. It's like they must walk through the turnstile and be like, here we go. Here we go. And like that's obviously not... When you're playing two grand...
I can understand that. I've done that many a time with Fulham seasons.
Of course, yeah. But, you know, you're now paying like £2,000 a season ticket or whatever. I saw someone said, so far I've paid £700 a win for my Tottenham season ticket. And I hope I get better value out than that by the end of the season. So we'll have to see. But I do think that this transfer window is important for that reason, if no other, that Tottenham need a boost. They're not too far off being able to compete for the top four if they turn things around in the next month or so. But obviously things could swing in the other direction too, and he could be getting the Ange treatment. So massive time coming up, and I do expect Tottenham to be one of, if not the busiest club in the Premier League.
There you go. There you go. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of the players that they might pick up in part three. Just a word on Richarlison before we take a break, because there's a lot of noise from Spurs fans about, you know, maybe opening up a gap in the roster by moving him on. Is there any noise around that from a Spurs perspective?
You said roster. I'm used to hearing that over here, but not from an English.
I'm doing my best, mate. I'm doing my best. I'm trying to come across to you in your own terms these days, you know?
I hate that word, actually. They're not going to loan him out. I don't think they'll get rid of him. I think they'll keep him for the season, because I think the benefits of keeping him for the season outweigh selling him, because you're not going to sell him at a decent enough rate now, and the clubs are primarily going to come in looking for loans as well. I don't get the feeling from people that I speak to that Tottenham will actually end up letting Richarlison leave. And I don't think the opportunities will be good enough for them. I still think he's eager to prove himself again at Tottenham. Obviously, he's linked with Everton and stuff like that, but Everton aren't going to put in a big money bid for Richarlison in January. So my hunch is that Richarlison leaves at the end of the season, but it'll definitely be a narrative that crops up.
Call me mad, but I wouldn't be surprised if Fulham get involved in that conversation, given Marco Silva absolutely adores Richarlison and the club are on a bit of a mission to prove to him that he should sign a new contract. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Fulham have a nose around that in January, at the very least. And that's not really coming from any sense of knowledge about the situation, but it just makes sense to me in terms of like, oh, you know, we're trying to get you to sign a new deal. There's a player that you really like that might be out of favour at his current club. I think Fulham will end up lowballing, and therefore Spurs will be like, no, thank you, you're all right. But like, I wonder if there isn't a bid at the very least. Right, let's take a break there. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some players who might be on the move. Make sure you stick with us. Welcome back to Ranks FC, our final part of this episode. And it's back over to Dean. We're going to do a little run through some players to keep an eye on in this January window.
Yeah, I started the last section with Man United, so I'll do the same here. Two players that obviously are talked about leaving are Kobbie Mainoo and Joshua Zirkzee. My hunch on Zirkzee is that he now stays. Amorim's always liked him from a technical standpoint. Just doesn't really know what position to play him in, because he's not an out-and-out nine, and he doesn't really work as a 10 given the other options that Amorim actually already has available to him. But obviously, while Sesko's been injured, Zirkzee's got his chance. He scored at Crystal Palace the other day. It was a well-taken goal. It's his first back-to-back 90 minutes of the season, finally getting some game time, finally feeling like he's part of it. And I would suspect that United look to now keep him around for the rest of the season. They don't really want to go out and sign a striker. They don't see anybody on the market so far that would do well to complement Sesko within the squad. And by having Zirkzee as well as Cunha as well as Mason Mount, players that can go and play that role. I think Xerxes probably going to hang around. Kobbie Mainoo probably stays because United are insisting that way at the moment. But I do think that a storyline will be that Mainoo asks for a transfer. I think that that will happen. He obviously asked for a loan before this season began. They didn't grant it. I think he'll do the same again. I don't think they'll grant it. I think that he's in for a really frustrating season. He was even linked with Arsenal. There was an ESPN story that mentioned him with Arsenal. I'm not convinced that the journalist...
As in United wouldn't sanction it. And also, like, it doesn't make sense from an Arsenal perspective.
Yeah, it's being reported, like ESPN say Kobbie
Mainoo. Was it Sam Tai? That guy's a fraud.
It was not Sam Tai. It was from, a journalist that is reliable when it comes to transfer news and Man United. And he was quoted, and I personally didn't take it the way that it's now being reported. But nonetheless, like, it's out there. Mainoo linked to Arsenal, obviously not going to happen. But he's been linked with Chelsea. He's been linked with Newcastle. He's been linked with Napoli. There's various things out there that Kobbie Mainoo is being mentioned alongside. And he's obviously had a bad year, barely any opportunities. But you could also argue that when he has got his opportunities, he's not done anything. I know that he hasn't had like long stretches of games, but there's been nothing so far to see why he would play himself in. And at the end of the day, he has to be better than someone in that starting lineup in order to get his chance. And, you know, while Man United aren't setting the world alight, like, he hasn't so far done anything when we've seen him to suggest that he should be in there. So I think, yeah, we'll see Mainoo pressing for a move, and I don't think it'll happen. There's always that narrative with Mainoo, like, he wants a move to save his World Cup. Kobbie Mainoo's not going to the World Cup. Like, it's too late. Unless there's a huge injury crisis within the England squad, you know, I don't see how the door can open at this stage to Kobbie Mainoo. So anyway, United can't worry about that. They've got to look after themselves. They need depth in the squad for the second half of the season. If they get in a significant midfielder, then maybe that opens the door. But for now, assume that Mainoo and Xerxes are told that they're staying exactly where they are.
Yeah, I mean, look, maybe that, as you said before, you know, if United do go and sign a central midfielder in January, maybe that changes the outlook a little bit. But unless they do that, I can't see him being allowed to leave.
No. Yeah, exactly that. Let's move on to Arsenal, who are not expected to have a busy transfer window. Obviously, they've done most of their transfer business already in the summer. In fact, they hope they've done all of their transfer business already. They made significant signings, and what Arsenal also did was they pushed the boundaries of their financial capabilities. And in signing the amount of players that they did and the caliber of players that they did, they had to get smart to make things happen. So some of the agreements, like, they're almost like temporary agreements that become a bigger deal a bit further down the line, just so they can actually get them done for now. But so Arsenal, I don't expect them to sign anyone. Ideally, they don't really want to lose anyone either. So you see talk of like Gabby Jesus being linked with a move, Miles Lewis-Skelly being linked with a move. I can't see those happening. I do wonder if maybe Ethan Nwaneri. I think that one might become interesting, and I can see there being plenty of interest in him. He's just not getting any opportunities, and it's so far a pretty wasted season for him. He can't really have any complaints because of the level that Arsenal have been playing at, but a loan move for Nwaneri, I do think, has some legs. I can see that becoming a talking point.
It'd have to be outside the Premier League, I think, for Arsenal to sanction it. But equally, he's such a useful piece to have around. And I know that obviously at that age, you want to be playing football regularly to sort of start to get your wheels turning a little bit. But like, if an Ødegaard goes down with another injury, or if an Eze gets an injury, for example, like having someone to bring off the bench and utilize in that position, I could see why Arteta wouldn't want to lose him. Equally, you have to kind of weigh up what's best for his development at the same time. And I suppose you could point to Max Dowman and be like, well, we've got another one coming through there, and maybe he's the one that gets the opportunity if someone goes down injured. But I can see it at the very least.
Yeah, exactly. So one to keep an eye on, really. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Also, over at across North London, we talked about Tottenham already. We haven't talked about the fact that Vicario, Venom himself, is being linked with a transfer. So I mentioned in that segment that I've reported a couple of months ago that Tottenham were on the lookout for a new goalkeeper. Now,
maybe they should sign James Trafford.
Well, they have been linked with him today, but is James Trafford better than Vicario? I don't think so.
Not notably. Yeah, I mean, I think he has a higher scope, and maybe he's a bit less of a head case, but he also doesn't
solve
the
shot.
No, he doesn't solve the problem immediately, and I think therefore the answer probably speaks for itself.
So I think my impression was that Tottenham would look for an understudy slash somebody to compete with Vicario, to improve him, to keep him on his toes, but potentially also take his place. Maybe that's Trafford. You know, maybe he fits the bill. But Trafford's already doing that at Man City. Why would he want to downgrade to do that at Tottenham? That wouldn't make any sense to me. So if Trafford's going to go, he's got to be the undisputed number one. But Vicario is linked today with Inter Milan, where there are growing concerns over their situation. There's all the Italian press are talking about them wanting...
Bringing in chaos to Inter feels like such a bad move at the moment. Just keep things calm is what I would say. Giuseppe Meazza for the moment. Vicario. That's not the answer.
Jan Sommer's getting a bit of flack. I mean, I don't know how deserved that is because I haven't seen enough of it.
He had a really bad start of the season. Then he recovered a bit and now he's just... it's not a tailspin, but he's having a few kind of pelters left, right. And I can take it that he's not been as good this year as he was last year. Mm. But last year, equally, he was absolutely world class. So, you know, you kind of expect a return to towards the mean at the very least.
I think Vicario will want to prove himself at Tottenham. I liked the way that after his mistake against Fulham, he apologised, he held his hands up straight afterwards, he did an interview on the pitch with the club's TV channel, and he talked about
Shout out Ben Haynes.
Yeah, talked about it all calmly. It was a good interview, and I was like, you know what, I really respect him for doing that, because a lot of goalkeepers wouldn't. So I personally think that Vicario will stay for the rest of the season, but I've got to put it out there, because when you're suddenly linked to Inter Milan... that is pretty significant. Let's move things on to Chelsea, who are keeping an eye on this Kenan Yildiz situation at Juventus. Now, I think Yildiz will stay at Juventus. I think he wants to, and I think the club want to keep him, and they've just got to find a financial middle ground.
He's desperate to be Del Piero, right? Like, that's the whole thing about him. I think if he wasn't desperate to be Del Piero, he would have already left Juventus at this point.
Yeah. And so Chelsea have been told, they've been kept at arm's length. Like, they're on standby, basically, in case these contract negotiations completely collapse. I'm expecting by the end of this month that we have more clarity, if not definitive answers on Yildiz's future at Juventus and a new contract. And I think he'll stay. If he doesn't, though, Chelsea will be bang in there. They'll be right in there at the front of the queue because they love him. I don't know where he's going to play. They'll figure that out once he's through the door. But that is something to look out for. I mean, obviously, when it comes to Chelsea, there are going to be various links. A goalkeeper will still be talked about. I think that Mike Maignan...
Just so we're clear on Chelsea for a second. So in the summer, they've got Giovanni Kenda joining. They have Emmanuel Omega joining. And they have Sapayev joining as well. Now, I'm not suggesting all of those players suddenly come in and start in the first team immediately. Or even,
in
a year's time.
You know it.
But I hope Omega isn't, because he's just come from there. But like, surely with the squad that Chelsea have right now, and look, I've come kind of not full circle on the model because I'm not 100% sure that it's the best thing for certain players, but like, they've proved that there is method in the madness, I think, is something we were looking at 2 years ago and be like, I just don't understand what they're doing. Like, and you look at it now and you're like, okay, I can see where you're getting to with some of this, but like, there is surely no space in this squad apart from, I would suggest, a goalkeeper and centre back to like bring in more players and make things happen.
Well, the way I would look at it is they were actively looking at players. Like, I think Xavi Simmons, they were looking at in the summer. They've been linked with quite a few. They ended up signing Buonanotte, right? On loan. What if Yildiz is like the upgrade on that? What if that's the sort of role they've got in?
But Buonanotte is fine, like, barely played. And also, isn't Enciso joining in the summer? Like, wasn't he sold to Strasbourg with the idea that he would become a Chelsea? Like, there's loads of really weird things happening.
There is a lot of weird things happening, but they're also actually, it's starting to all work out for Chelsea in terms of the longer term projects. Like, Anselmino's out of Dortmund, but he's doing really well. And now Dortmund are like, we want to keep this player. We don't want to send him back. There's little things like that. And Chelsea seem to be in a good place, whereas even if these players aren't playing for them, they're going to do well on the back of them. Anyway, so Yildiz, I doubt this will happen in January, but again, it's just one worth keeping an eye on. As Mannion, as I mentioned, like, probably one for the summer, but if Jorgensen leaves Chelsea in January, then maybe they'll need a goalkeeper in January.
I get that. Also, yeah. Like with Kenan Yildiz, like, I'm not really knocking the transfer strategy here. If Kenan Yildiz is available, you sign him. Like, I don't care who you are. Like, you, everyone should be in that conversation. Real Madrid should be in that conversation. Barcelona should be in that conversation. Chelsea, Man City, maybe not Man United at this point, although I think he'd actually fit quite nicely in that system. You know, all of those teams should be in the conversation if Yildiz is available, because he's a supreme talent.
Yeah, no, totally is. Arsenal were actually linked today, I think. God knows where they'd play him. But nonetheless, the last player I want to talk about, unavoidable, is Mark Gahey. Potentially can sign for another club in January. His contract's winding down and he will be talked about.
Would Palace take the fee now at this point if they sign another centre-back?
They don't intend to, but they might. But the thing is, Mark Gay, I'm told, just doesn't want to leave now in January, because why would he? He might as well see out the season now at Palace. And as soon as his move to Liverpool fell through...
Champions League chasing Crystal Palace, is it?
Well, he suddenly, as a free agent, the world opens up to you financially and ambition-wise, because the club isn't paying a fee for you anymore. So it means that your personal deal is going to be better. And it means that more clubs can come and talk to you. And for Gahey, I think that that's great. Like, Bayern Munich have been very early onto this, by the way. Like, they really have looked at this situation, which I think at a time when there's other centre-backs out there that are gettable, is interesting that Gahey is the one that they're looking at. Obviously, Real Madrid and Barcelona also been talked about with Gahey. Real Madrid recently were on the tail of Konate and have decided not to do that, probably quite wisely. Gahey could come into the thinking there. Liverpool obviously still in the conversation. So there's loads of clubs to talk about. But I'm told that Gahey's stance still is right now, I'll decide at the end of the season, I'm not doing this in Jan. But you never know. You never know what could come up. So again, one to have on your radar, that Mark Gahey is available to sign a pre-contract with a foreign club. And also, you never know, Liverpool might try and do something wild and try and sign him.
Yeah, they might need to, especially, you know, with the injuries that they've had in the centre-back line as well. But like, there's also the thing that, you know, we've talked about the Ibrahima Konate deal to Real Madrid over and over and over again. Like, it's been such a talking point. Like, if you're Real Madrid and you're looking at those two players and thinking, which one of those free agents do I want to sign in the summer? It's Marc Gay, right? Like, there's no real question about it given the performances this season. Mm. Now, I think that Konate will return to some sort of semblance of form at some point. Like, I don't think he's become a dreadful footballer overnight. But equally, it's like, do you remember the Konate and Upamecano conversation that we used to have over and over again when they were both at Leipzig? Like, you know, who's the better centre-back? Have Liverpool got the steel there? And Upamecano was struggling for a bit of Bayern. And it was like, everyone who was on the Konate side of that was like, oop, nailed it, absolutely nailed it. And now you're looking at it and be like, maybe not. Maybe it's a slightly different conversation.
True.
But I feel like Liverpool probably do need to go and sign a centre-back in January. Like, they just don't have the depth there because Joe Gomez's fitness, as good as he was at the weekend, remains questionable. Leone's obviously out for an extended period of time. And, you know, whether he's going to become a superstar or not, I tend to trust in the Liverpool recruitment team in terms of their identification of talent. But you look at it and think, well, even just for the right now, someone has to come in and staunch the bleeding because, you know, even if you think that Konate is going to get back to his best, the two of them playing every single game is just not sustainable over the course of a 50-game season. And so therefore, you're in a situation where, like, they almost have to go out and sign someone in January. So whether that's Gay or someone else, I think is an interesting conversation. But, like, I would be absolutely stunned if Liverpool don't go and sign a centre-back in the January window.
Yeah, we'll have to see. There's no real talk around it at the moment. They don't want to talk about transfers. They're so busy trying to fit the last lot into the squad and they're trying to avert conversations about anything like that right now that they're giving nothing away. But you're right. Like, there is definitely a hole there that needs to be filled almost quite literally at times.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right. And with that, we've come to the end of our main ranking. Thank you very much, Dean. I feel more enlightened than I was at the start of the podcast. So it's going to be an exciting January whilst I'm gallivanting around Brazil and Argentina. You're going to be holding down the fort, talking about all of these transfers that are hopefully going to happen early doors to keep us ticking along through that busy, busy period. But for now, what's there for me to do is say a massive thank you to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. And we'll see you all very, very shortly. Take it easy, Rank Squad. Peace.